This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Ramya. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI's on-air community, and everyone's invited.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the program. We appreciate you being here. And oh, my goodness. It is a Friday, so we're swinging open the gateway to the weekend. And that's Ramya Amadhin. I'm Kelly McDonald, host of the program. And we really thank you, wherever you're listening in, for settling back. So, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the book of the month that we have been reading for three, Stephen King. One of the interesting things that I find when you have a book that's been around for a while, and maybe this is something at some point we'll address with Ryan Huey and the Chatty Bookshelf, is I know before the Marrakesh Agreement, which allowed so much access to books, audiobooks, and the sharing of audiobooks was the big thing. Instead of Canada producing a version of it, the United States, the UK, now we can share them a little more. And that's okay, because obviously copyright law is so important, Rum. But it's the many different versions that have been produced over the years and now available one way or another. And I love the idea of choice. Once again, we talk about, you know, abridged versions of things, full versions, the copy book. But now when you talk about different narrators and preference, and I first heard a lot of, and I'm going to do it today so people can put this on me, but I heard a lot of people talk about the different readers for, wait for it, Harry Potter.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
You know, you had your books when I first, it wasn't Jim Dale. That's right, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
It wasn't the first one I ever heard. I don't have a clue who it was, but I'm pretty certain it wasn't. Maybe I could be corrected.
Not Stephen Fry. Like, was it another UK
I
voice?
Really don't know. No, I don't remember. Because, again, remember, I didn't stick with it. I read and said, I can't
Sadly.
Do this. This isn't, you know, that's... Yeah. So, but I love the choice. But there's some choice out there that's just due to the fact that something so popular, older, so different versions were done prior to the Marrakesh. And that in itself can have some drawbacks, but it can also have positives, Rum.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, overall, I always love to support and promote that things are available everywhere because it just gives people options. Now,
choice.
You know, when, yeah, yep. And Nels and Sela, they do an incredible job just putting things out there for people who have print restrictions. The public library is fantastic as well. And then, you know, you pay for what you want with other services. But truly, at the end of the day, we can talk about how we're reading on this or this or this or this because it's all available, which is huge.
And I think it's so huge to be able to talk about your reader and how it makes it, how it doesn't, that narrator and the great work they're doing. And, you know, I always love saluting that. Just like sound or anything, of course, with an interest of people who work in broadcasting. Let's take a look at what we've got ahead on the program today. Chat GPT. Is passing the tests required for medical licenses and business degrees. John Beeler, he'll be here in a little while to tell us more in the app update.
Kind of scary. We're also talking Chatty Bookshelf for more audiobook conversation, and we're talking about a binge-worthy sci-fi series or two for beginners.
Ooh, wow. Sci-fi, he's going there today. And we revisit and weigh in on conversations from the past week. We call the segment Cut for Time. We'll do that in hour number two of the program. Okay, folks. Doctors in Southeast Texas are stunned that Dale Dean is walking or alive at all after a lightning strike traveled through his body. They told him he should have had a heart attack.
Dale Dean's timber hauling truck got stuck in the mud during a storm near Newton, Texas. He was hitching it up to be towed.
The lightning struck, and it struck me through the cable, and it knocked me about 3 feet over in the ditch.
He phoned 911, and on the way to the hospital, called his wife.
Beverly, and she said, well, let me call you right back.
She went to the hospital. On the way home,
I grabbed his hand, and I thought, if it would have been different, I would have been coming home by myself.
Dean says he's blessed to be alive. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
When I was a kid, I'd hear a lot about these things. You know, people getting hit on a golf course by lightning. We'd hear about unfortunate fatal hits. We'd also hear about people suddenly being able to do something or having a second sense. They'd swear that, yeah, that happened after. And of course, Ramya, I always felt, I wonder if it would give me my eyesight.
Did you actually wonder?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was one of these things.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, no, yes. Well, of course, I was a kid. But, you know, you always thought of that fluky what if, right? Because you'd hear these different things, you know, along the lines of, oh, yeah, eat your carrots, eat your spinach, you'll get stronger. Eat your carrots, you'll be able to see. Mm-hmm. And it might actually cure whatever ails you or whatever, you know, weakness is there. And so I used to always think, because it would be this crazy stuff that would TV shows and stuff would do. And when you're a kid, you think, well, if it happened on TV, it really could possibly happen to me. Come inside. But you're standing out in the rain. Get in here. And my mother was very, watch that lightning. Don't be by the window. Did you have any weird kind of,
I
don't want to say hope.
No.
Nothing like that?
No. I would avoid lightning like the average person. And also, my mom was terrified to drive in the rain. Like she had, when we were growing up, if we were stuck out there and we haven't gotten home yet and she was driving, it was a full-blown situation. We'd have to pull over.
So what would she do?
We would just pull over and
wait. Where would you go?
Like, I don't know why, but she thought that being in movement would make it worse. And
right.
Not just for the lightning, for anything, really.
Well,
but even
certainly.
The thunder would freak her out. And, she's been exposed to tons of rain. I don't know. But, didn't think anything about it. But it is electricity. I guess anything could happen.
You never know, right? And being cautious driving in rain, always a good thing.
Uh-huh.
Another good thing coming our way, folks. Grant Hardy, he's going to join us. He's our reporter in Vancouver. Let's see what he's got next for us as we discuss trending headlines.
Don't miss a minute. Kelly and Ramya will be right back.
You want to find either of us on Twitter? Ramya's available at AllRams with a Z. I'm at AMI Kelly Mack. Love to hear from you. Please visit, say hi, and of course, follow our Twitter feed for the program. At Kelly and Ramya. Appreciate you wherever you are checking us out via the television, via AMI audio, and of course online. All right, folks, the man's going to always have some great things for us to think about when he brings in some headlines here for us. Grant Hardy painstakingly looks and then delivers. Let's bring him on board.
Hey, I'm Grant Hardy, and welcome to the Headlines segment. I tackle everything from health and lifestyle to accessibility and tech. I have it all right here on Kelly and Ramya.
This is the Friday edition of his Headlines as he joins us from Vancouver. Grant, welcome back.
Hey, guys. Happy Friday. Happy almost weekend.
Happy Friday. Uh-huh.
Swinging open our gateway to the weekend, and we start, sir, and not to put pressure on you, with you.
All right. Sounds good. Hopefully everyone can hear me okay. Mm-hmm.
Sounding good.
Having some sound issues today. Speaking of issues, a lot of people have housing issues in this country, and it turns out there are fewer apartments available to rent in Canada than at any time since 2001. Canada's apartment rental vacancy dropped to 1.9% last year, the lowest level in more than two decades, as the country took in additional newcomers and many residents were priced out of the real estate market. That was well below the 3.1% vacancy rate in 2021, when the country started to reopen after the end of the pandemic. Marks the tightest rental market, as I said, since 2021, when the vacancy rate, 2001, when the vacancy rate was 1.7%, according to the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corp's annual research. There is a severe stress in the rental system. The country's largest rental markets were under particular stress, with Toronto's apartment vacancy rate dropping to 1.7% last year from 4.4%. Montreal, also Vancouver, is just 0.9% with a one-bedroom place in Vancouver going for over $2,000. We've got bidding wars for rental apartments, if you can believe that, which is like totally ridiculous. I mean, because you're bidding on something that's not even really tangible. It's not something you own. And we've got people using the supply of condos for the rental market as well. Yep. So it's kind of an interesting situation where, you know, for everybody who complains about, I see this so often, you know, people complaining about, you know, a crappy tenant that they have. The balance is like so tipped in favor of landlords who really can do pretty much whatever they want. You know, in Toronto, we've got those situations where in Toronto, people are like cutting up their basement suite into seven little units and renting it out to students who have a little hole in the wall in the basement that they're living in. It's just really terrible. Wouldn't it be nice if we actually all had a right to a reasonable place to live?
And it isn't, Grant, unfortunately, seemingly in this country, that right, because we are looking at, like you said, what's available. And, oh, well, there's not much, so we can charge a lot. Let people battle over it. Then I recently heard how awkward a report came out today. How awkward the people of color, the people who are in minorities coming to this country, as you've mentioned, or been here. There are certain cities that on their list are just tragic when it comes to available accommodations. And again, going back to the biases, the whatever it might be of landlords and what they're looking for. And then people just pushed out because, well, I want to upgrade these places. So out you go. We'll charge higher rent once you're gone. And what are the reasons? Well, multiple reasons. Even though we can challenge this, how many people are successful when they do, Ramya?
Right. I live in a very old place, a very old building. And it was a recent-ish move. And when I moved there, the rent for a two-bedroom was $1,600, right? And now my next-door neighbor, who lives in the exact same two-bedroom that I do, except upgraded appliances, that's, I'd say, the only difference, is paying $2,600 plus utilities. So everything that you would pay for in a home, a house that you own, your water, your heat, your hydro, she pays for on her own. So it's just kind of, to wrap your head around something like this is, wow. You know, and I know you live in Vancouver, Grant, so it's very similar circumstances over there. But truly, like, people will pay anything, like going back to what you guys were saying, people will pay anything because there's nothing available on top of everything being extremely expensive. And yes, the thing that I'm noticing is people who are very new to Toronto from out of the country, so immigrating directly into Toronto, aren't even fully aware most of the time of the picture being painted here.
Of even the laws and the rules and protection. And definitely, I find that people who have a disability fall into a few different camps. There are sort of people who end up accepting things like, you know, guide dog discrimination or pet deposits for their guide dogs, things that are illegal, but just to kind of get in somewhere that's not, you know, a hellhole, if I can say that. The other thing that often happens is, you know, people wind up in subsidized places, which once you get to the end of the wait list and you get in there, there's a lot of crap that happens there. Like people talk about, you know, fire alarms happening every night and, you know, huge floods and people doing, you know, terrible things. Well,
a lot of times they'll take money and not do the work on a lot of the places. Yes. It's all, you'd swear, why are you pocketing so much money? And I don't know if it's rainy day, if it's just, well, why should I spend money when people are going to break it? And again, unfortunately, if you've had that as your experience as a landlord, you become so jaded.
Well, think about who we're renting from, right? Like in Toronto, there are just a handful of corporations that own practically all the condos and all the buildings even. Like it doesn't even have to be condos. It could be rental units. Everything is owned by just a few well-known companies. And so they can charge an arm and a leg. Good on them. Yeah. But and we would pay it.
Yeah, the other thing that I find sort of interesting, the Vancouver team, back when we had a bureau here, we did a documentary on the housing crisis, and I looked at some
people can find that on the app, by the way, folks, on the AMI app.
Absolutely. Yep. And I looked at some of the comments. There was an interesting Reddit thread about it, and a lot of people were saying, like, well, why would somebody with a disability need to live in Vancouver to start with?
Oh, wow.
And it was interesting because, like, on the one hand, for everybody, there's a huge economic benefit to living closer to the places that you need to work and learn and play. But especially for people with disabilities, you end up living in a smaller, you know, place outside the big city. As I'm preaching to the choir here, but we end up having less opportunity. Like, it's essential to live in a big city because that's where the opportunity is. That's where it's happening.
Closer transit, if you're in that situation, accessible transit. You have so many reasons that for so many people, medical appointments, it's life and death. It's as important as they deemed those for computer equipment and things that we need to learn to do, and those necessities that for that's just as important. And affordable housing for people with disabilities, I'm not saying we need to be at the top of the list, I'm not saying, but it has to be taken into account. And no one's asking to live in a palace, but somewhere safe, somewhere clean enough, and somewhere where somebody responds to the needs and taking care and accessibility. It'd just be nice to have options to move into different places closer to your workplace or where you're comfortable for shopping. Maybe an elevator with Braille, maybe the ramps, proper doors, lighting, whatever it might be.
Just how much lower quality of accessibility there would be if I moved out of Toronto. I've had very real conversations with myself and others about what it would be like to live in a small town in Ontario. And yes, I'd probably pay half for, you know, my monthly spendings would be cut in half, but what am I losing? What am I paying for instead?
We talked
it's something to think about, right?
Yeah. We talked a bit about this in Toronto because you're young, you want to have not only work, but also kind of like a young, you know, life. If you could save up such and such extra money, you know, for retirement, whatever, like, is that really worth it if you can't kind of live your life the way you want when you're young?
In the present, exactly. I know, and that's a whole different conversation too. Like, you know, people have different opinions on that, but it's true.
And I think we want to make sure people, there are a lot of places around Canada, smaller places than Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, that do have a lot of accessibility, do have a lot of the things, people do have social lives, do have great grocery stores, movies, whatever it might be. But, you know, for those who need to be, like, again, unfortunately tied to that, for people who are able to work, who are in the disability community, unfortunately, most of them, now, this is before pandemic, I'll say, let's say the average that's been for decades before the pandemic, you had to move to a Toronto, a Vancouver. And these conversations that Grant, the stuff he's presenting here, was the conversation 5 years ago, 12 years ago, 15, 20 years ago.
Go ahead.
It's an ongoing conversation.
It is,
and despite the pandemic or not, when you still hear about prices and how many homes they want to put into this country because we are lacking severely, and you're hearing, you know, in Ontario alone, you know, 1.5 million new places need to be built for people to live in. This is scary. Grant, we have less than 3 minutes. Do you have, you want to touch your other one, or do you want to say a few more things on this?
I guess briefly, I was kind of reading an interesting article about how to live to be over 100. And essentially, it's as vague as you can imagine. It basically depends on genes, which unfortunately, if you don't sort of win the gene lottery, it makes it difficult. But it also depends on location. Like, United States and Japan have the most the most confirmed centenarians and super centenarians, people who live to be 110 years or older. Ooh. And it was also interesting because it said that it really has to do with what the world was when you were born. Were you born into a war zone? Were you born into pollution? Mm. How are you raised? What things could you consume? Very interesting. But it basically says just, you know, try and be healthy and enjoy your life the best you can. So when have we ever heard that advice before?
Right. But I love, Grant, the idea of it depends when you're born, because if you had the opportunity to have a good head start on health and taking care and less stress,
it's true,
you know, as a baby, it is. Because
it is very true.
Yeah.
Like, imagine all the mental health alone, the challenges that you would deal with being born into war zone and war times compared to someone who wasn't.
Poverty.
Yeah.
Yep, poverty.
Yeah.
There's so many things that work its way on your body, your spirit, and everything. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you know from the beginning, it starts chipping away on you. Excellent conversation, sir. Thank you kindly.
My pleasure, guys. We'll see you back here in about an hour.
Okay. Grant will join us for Cut for Time when we do that in hour two. But right now, we just went over a couple of headlines, some things that he picked out for us to have discussion today about. And we do this on Wednesdays and Fridays on the program with him. Always a lot of fun. And again, as I mentioned, lots to think about. Coming up next, ChatGPT is passing the test required for medical licenses and business degrees. John Beeler will tell us more in our app update.
Stick around and learn something new. Kelly and Rumya return with more in a moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, returning with us for more of the program. Kelly and Rumya with you this afternoon on your Friday as we're swinging open the gateway to the weekend. Remember, lots of opportunities to check out the show. First repeat at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Rum, we're going to get into a conversation with John Beeler shortly, and I kind of wanted to throw something at you first just to kind of think about this till we get to this question for him. If you could possibly, as a creator of music, say, all right, I've written 5 songs, we've recorded 6, you know, with others that we have. This is the one I think is great. I want to make it popular. I wonder how the heck you could make that a top 10 song. Wouldn't that be interesting if you could do it? Think on that for a while.
Okay, maybe we'll
through the show come up with something. Maybe we'll get a hint shortly as to how that could possibly happen.
Maybe we're going to get mad at that too. We'll find out.
I'm sure.
But this is the reason my song hasn't become top 10 yet. Yeah, we're going to find out.
Exactly.
But for those scenarios and more, let's bring on John Beeler to talk apps.
I'm John Beeler from Get Connected in Vancouver. Join me on Kelly and Ramya, where I share the latest app, mobile, and tech news. Everything from accessibility and product launches to privacy and security. We cover the gamut.
John, we're totally going to get into this whole, you know, how do things get viral in a second. But first, our best friend, ChatGPT, is back. And this time, it's passing the test required for medical licenses and business degrees. So I, for one, had not thought that this would be a direction that we head in. But I think we're heading in some direction for sure. So what's going on?
Yeah, it's really interesting. A number of professors have been playing around with the AI tool, ChatGPT. And for those that aren't familiar, this is something you can basically talk to, not unlike a search engine or a smart assistant, and sort of give it a question and it'll use AI to respond to that. And you can get it to do all kinds of things, whether it's writing your music or writing a thesis for you. Now people are actually getting it to take tests to see how well it does. And it's actually passing these tests. So the Wharton School of Business actually had an MBA program, and it passed the test for that.
Wow.
Now, it didn't pass with flying colors, though. It actually got a B, which is kind of surprising because you think an AI tool would have a perfect score.
All the information,
Whereas I'd be happy with the B.
I would love my old marks. I would love to take an MBA test and just pass, you know, by a computer take it for me. But so it's interesting that a number of the sort of responses that it gave clearly showed a lack of sort of creativity in sort of some of the essay answers and those types of things. But it's also, you know, we're basically starting to push the limits of what these AI tools can do based on a limited data set. Keep in mind, the version of ChatGPT that's being used today is called version 3, and it's based on information that was given to it as of November of 2021, and it does not have access to the internet. I imagine the next version, 4, will have access to the internet and will have a much more robust data set. Apparently, it's going to be hundreds of trillions of parameters compared to 100 billion, which it has right now. And that's going to mean it's going to be passing these tests with flying colors. And it's not just business exams that it's taking. It's also taking exams that doctors have to take to become certified in various things. So one of the things that we've discovered with ChatGPT is it's really good at making up stuff. And it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily a right answer, but it's very confident about the answer. So it seems believable, and because there's some conviction behind the responses that it's giving you. So I could see how some of these tests, where there's some interpretation, it's not just a multiple choice,
right,
or it's, you know, there's a lot of leeway as far as how these tests are marked.
Reminds me of writing tests, and you know, you weren't really sure of which of five things were the full answer, that you knew it was in there, so you'd put down the five things and get credit, and then told, well, yeah, but you're kind of guessing here, or stretching here, you're basically telling everyone everything back from your notes, and no, that's not quite the right answer. It almost just gathers up what it has connected to it by the sounds of, and presents it. So when those parameters change, man, that's going to be huge, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I the only one who didn't realize up until this moment that you said it, John, that ChatGPT doesn't have access to the internet?
I didn't either.
Wow. So all of these incredible things that it's doing is without even internet being factored in, and like unlimited amount of information.
And these guys have told us this. John told us this before with by saying all in stuff from 2021.
That's right. Up until
it never dawned on me, John.
Yeah. And that's by design, because this is basically a test phase.
Yeah.
I think it's extremely powerful when you can actually have it query, you know, recent events and have knowledge of something that happened yesterday or an hour ago that's on the internet.
So I'm imagining like how well Google does when you search for different tidbits and info like that on top of what ChatGPT is already capable of doing.
Yeah.
And being able to gather all that is wild.
So interesting. If you ask anything about COVID, its data is as only recent as 2021 versus what we have now. In that sense of writing something, wow. Off the top, we were joking around about if you could make your favorite song that you've written and you knew I love it, I want to make it a popular song. How could I do it if I had that formula to do so, John? Well, we're hearing now TikTok is confirming that its own employees can decide what goes viral.
Yeah, the sort of the long-standing premise with TikTok is that it's using an algorithm to help give you what you're looking for, and also to track the trends. And those trends have been generated by the algorithm for the most part, but they confirmed to Forbes magazine recently that their employees actually have a magical button. It's called a heating button that they can press on any video to basically bump that to the top of the list ahead of the algorithm. And that's why you see random videos that make no sense for your algorithm trending, because the employees have some reason to make it viral. And there's lots of reasons why they could do that. You know, they could have a partnership deal with that company, or they want to, you know, push something into more eyeballs to give other creators the chance to bubble up. And they also have a couple of really interesting reasons to do this. One is to have a diversity of the algorithm, because sometimes you're only going to get one or two trends and you'll just get nothing but those two things. This staff button allows them to actually sort of inject some fresh ideas into that algorithm. But also, you know, it's just kind of interesting to see how they're using this. And now when you watch TikTok, or you're endlessly scrolling at 2 o'clock in the morning, you have this new knowledge now that, well, maybe what I'm seeing is not completely computer generated. It is artificial. But, you know, it also, it's kind of not surprising, you know, anytime there's a computer system involved with humans and computer systems, humans always have had the admin ability to go in and do, you know, do stuff.
Sure.
So it's not that surprising.
That part of it is not surprising, but I think what is surprising to a degree is the fact that, like, we all relied on TikTok to kind of move itself forward, right? Like, what was popular was getting viral or getting views. You know what I mean? Yeah, and the shareability, the likability, how much content we get through and all of that. I'm curious, though, if it's a vicious cycle, this whole, you know, fighting bias with this heat button, which is to say, you know, if we're thinking, okay, let's make it fresh, let's make it exciting, is that all that we're pressing the button for? I think not. You know, sometimes we're probably going to put our own biases into what is being, what we're setting up as being viral.
Well, there would be a process, wouldn't there? And only certain people, key people, or steps.
Nonetheless, that makes it more concerning.
Well, it doesn't. It does. And I mean. Well, I don't know. I find if one person can just randomly do it, it just becomes.
I mean, it's
ridiculous.
Like fighting computer bias with human bias, right? Like, there's
well,
no real
sure
way
it
around
is.
It. Yeah.
Well, for sure it is. If we want the computer, we want algorithm. I think what's truly popular or catching on to be what gets up there. But is there any process, John? Did they talk about there's 10 people that have access to the bot and how it works?
They didn't get into specifics, but they did say that it's not every employee, it's a select few, which
whatever Rami's that means
is a little concerning. Like, who are the chosen
certainly.
Ones?
Yeah, who are the chosen ones, and why are they choosing
That's
what goes
right.
viral?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. I'd love to know those answers.
Yeah.
No, well, maybe not.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I agree with you, John. You know, it's not like, oh my goodness, I can't believe TikTok is doing this. Of course, there's people doing this in all of the apps that we use for similar purposes. But I'm curious about, you know, where we would be, let's say, as a comparison, if this wasn't part of the process.
And they're the only ones to admit it, right, John?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just it, too. And, you know, one of the things that drew me to TikTok at first, though, was because the algorithm was so good. You just look at a couple of videos of things that you're interested in, and that's your feed.
Yes.
And it just keeps feeding you it like you're, you know, a hungry hippo.
You know?
Like, just give me more.
Yeah.
And so I always thought that was the magic sauce that TikTok had that maybe the other companies didn't have, but maybe the other companies have the same problem. They just don't have as good of an algorithm.
Yeah,
and
right.
We don't know for Instagram, for example, and Facebook, how much human bias is there, or, you know, humans pressing buttons versus just the natural algorithm feeding us random stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. Whereas TikTok, their algorithm is much stronger and much more focused on things that you're interested in.
Yeah. It's that like mouse trap situation. I can't remember what psychology, but it was, you know, it knows when to press a button, and we're just like that on TikTok. It's terrible. It's terribly addictive.
Pavlov's dog? Pavlov's dog, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah, like we just know, like, give me another singer
the
and now
reaction.
My entire feed. But one more story to get to. I'm not sure what this is, but Richmond RCMP bus driver's license forgery lab.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this one up because I thought it was really interesting. The RCMP recently had a large bust of this lab in Richmond. And what was concerning about it, and it's something that we talk a lot about on this segment, is identity theft.
Mm-hmm.
And this lab was extremely sophisticated in the sense that they had very high-end, expensive printing equipment to make very, very accurate forgeries of driver's licenses, not just for BC, but also for a number of provinces and even some states. And even further than that, they were also they had a number of templates for various things like the Canadian permanent residency card. And so what's happening is they're using all this data that we've talked about all the time about these databases that you can buy on the dark web that have all this personal information about you. And they're creating profiles and fake driver's licenses, but they're putting their criminal's photo on it. So when they walk into a bank or a car dealership or Best Buy to get a credit card, it's the person in front of them with your information. And there's been a number of cases recently where people have actually been able to use these kinds of fake IDs to even sell your condo out from underneath you.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, this has been huge this week with all the condos with people's property being sold. They go away to do something what was it, the Airbnb, the people that took Airbnb, and all of a sudden they come home to it and somebody has sold it. Unbelievable.
What do you get mad at? Okay, go. Yep.
Well, the problem with this particular story is I don't have a nice, happy outcome. There's nothing you can do to prevent this other than being diligent with your personal identity everywhere else. These people are motivated. It's definitely criminal activity. They're funded. They can clearly afford to purchase these very elaborate printing systems to do these duplicates that are very realistic. All you can do is just try to protect what you put on the internet. And this is a drum we beat all the time. And this is the outcome of that. It's good that the government has been and the police have been busting these forgery rings, but it's whack-a-mole. There are going to be more of them.
Yeah. And this feels so real. Like, compared to all the, things we talk about, banks, identity theft for your finances or online identities, this feels like it could be anything because it's physical identification based on stuff that you put out everywhere else. John, we got to let you go. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Always scaring us with something, John Beeler from Get Connected.
Even on a Friday, he doesn't get yelled at like Shaq does.
Yeah, he doesn't get the same rules as Shaq does, for sure. John Beeler joining us for our app update every Friday.
On the other side of the break, speaking of the man, Bill Shackleton here for The Buzz.
Keep it here for more of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV.
So we like to settle back on a Friday. If you're new to the program, thanks for giving us some of your time. But Ramya, myself, the team, everybody just likes to kind of enjoy the show, and sometimes some of the conversation gets a little heavier. But poor Bill, he's been warned. Come on, Bill, bring us some of that happy, stuff compared to
instructed.
When he comes on to do The Buzz with us. He's been instructed, and it's been that way. It's harder with John Beeler because a lot of John stuff we need to know now. Can't say, let's wait a week, but especially since he's stuck on Fridays, we need to have to put that stuff out there. So for people like Bill, it's a different set, Bill, because you have the Wednesday and the Thursday. You can put in all that mayhem and murder and stuff like that that you want there. But on the Fridays, as the producers have done, just to give some context to how come it's that way as we swing open the gateway to the weekend.
In case you were wondering, Billy, right? Like, because sometimes Bill might be like, hey, that's not fair, and want to fight us on it. But Billy, Friday's specific stories
still last. Got to remember his nickname was Diesel. I don't want to be the recipient if he gets worked up and, he just shoved you aside like a diesel.
Yeah.
Billy, welcome.
Hello. And actually, I've got an AI article. Yeah, there's tons of them in the KM Press this week, as you probably know. But this is an interesting one. AI wildfire detection bill gets initial approval in Colorado, coming from Associated Press. So a year after the most devastating wildfire in the state's history scorched nearly 1,000 homes, lawmakers are considering joining other Western states by adopting artificial intelligence in the hope of detecting blazes before they burn out of control. This is going to be kind of interesting. So basically what they're doing is... the human lookout towers that used to be, they've all been replaced by cameras. So basically what they're doing is they're adding several more, and in the hopes of basically detecting a fire before it gets out of control, so they can move resources into the area quicker. So the algorithm is going to be able to, hopefully, if it works, detect whether, like, how serious the blaze is. Mm-hmm. And if it's just somebody smoking a cigarette or a campfire, that's not going to be considered to be a serious threat. But if it's, you know, something really big, then they're going to move resources into that area and hopefully be able to stomp these fires out. What one of the things that that's considered is that when there's a drought, fires burn quicker. Yeah. So they're going to have to act really quick, which is why they've a lot of these forest fires get out of control.
Right.
Well, and they'll put the warnings out, Billy, and I think that's wonderful. We know and we understand, hey, man, riding along even in your all-terrain vehicle or whatever it might be, a spark from that can cause these fires. We hear about lightning causes these fires because everything is so dry. But we do have the technology to be able to look, see everywhere and say, hey, that's a little bit bigger than somebody's little campfire. Mm-hmm. That's an area where that's densely wooded, even if it is something like a campfire. And if somebody's putting it where they shouldn't be, really, rangers could be alerted. And, hey, we better take a run out there and tell those campers to be careful or see what's going on. There's so much of that technology there, you know, when you really think about it, Bill.
There is. And the thing is that if it turns out to be a big fire, they can move, get resources from other states if they mm-hmm. know that they need the extra help.
Yeah.
So the idea is getting there quicker and being, you know, being more efficient in manpower and moving their equipment where it has to go.
Yes. Now, obviously, the speed is probably the biggest thing about this, because you can potentially get to, not even get to the actual place, but understand the situation so quickly and be so proactive. I'm honestly, like, after hearing this, I'm thinking, why haven't we done this earlier?
And that's what I meant about technology, yeah. right? We have it. Why hasn't this been done? We're worried
several
about so
years
many other
of wildfires
things.
All mm. over the West Coast. And, you know, this discussion is, it's the first time I'm hearing about it.
Well, when we talk about the stores and being able to implement stuff to know, hey, there's short of antifreeze in aisle 5 or whatever it might be, and it can tell so they know to bring more out or restock or whatever. And we're talking satellites that can see so many things from floods to fires. Yeah, it seems like a no-brainer, Bill.
Yeah. Now, do we want to move into another one about, this is interesting. New pill treats diabetic cats without daily insulin shots. This is really interesting.
Cats get insulin shots with diabetes? I had no idea.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And if this works, Bill, wow.
If it does. So, you know, when I was thinking about this and I'm saying to myself, would I have the courage to give an animal, I mean, it's bad enough giving yourself a shot, but giving an animal a shot, it's almost amount to me. It would be amount to cruelty for me.
You're not comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable. So a lot of people, according to the article, they put their cats down because they can't do it, or they don't have the time to do it, or they don't know how to do it.
That's painful.
Yeah, it's so this pill, the only caveat to this is that if your cat is already on insulin, you can't use the pill, because apparently it causes side effects. And when they were doing the study, hundreds of cats had to be euthanized because, you know, they didn't know, of course, whether you could do both. So apparently you can't. So it's
one or the other at a certain stage, I would imagine, a cat would qualify for this.
I guess.
Like if they've already been on insulin,
you can't backtrack.
But this pill could prevent the cat from having to be on insulin.
Yes. Oh yeah, for sure. Mm. I mean, now the price is interesting. It would cost $50 a month, but the vet could charge two or three times more. So you're talking possibly $150 to $200 a month. Still, though,
that's a lot. Yeah,
it's a lot,
but it's a lot for insulin anyway, isn't it? I'm pretty sure that's not covered. Not much is covered in the pet side of
pet
things.
World.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know, like, it's going to go back to health conversations we had about have about humans, guys, but it that's where it is for me. You know, there's so much that vets do to try to help us understand that exercise and good diet for our pets is so important. And unfortunately, you know, if your cat is diabetic and that's due to lifestyle and diet, there's not much you can do after it sets in. It's the same thing about, you know, hip dysplasia and other things that different breeds of cats and dogs are prone to. But yeah, big cats are so common. Like, it's so normal for a cat to be huge and it's so cute, but it's not cool. And the older the cat gets, the more challenges you're going to run into anyways. I'm sorry. I know I'm PSAing right now, but it's true. Like, and now look at the things that you have to learn to deal with, including giving your cat insulin shots, which is not fun for you or the cat.
Nope. No. And again, there are different circumstances. Things happen. I know it's not quite the same as human diabetes, but diabetes is diabetes of what it does in tearing down. Whether
and we know the lack of exercise that cats get, indoor cats.
Sure.
It's a done deal. Yeah.
Billy, your next piece.
Yes. Former home of Nova Scotia's first black doctor gets heritage status. Kind of interesting. We've talked about the first black postman before. Now we're talking about Nova Scotia's first black doctor. Licker is his last name. And basically he got his degree from McGill in 1916, but unfortunately he was denied hospital privileges. Yeah, the article didn't say why, but we can assume that Clement Licker was, because of his color. But he was actually an unsung hero during the Halifax explosion. He worked night and day to, you know, there were so many people hurt and killed when these two ships, collided in the harbor. And he worked night and day to save as many people as he could.
Mm.
It's kind of nice that we recognize these doctors, these people who work so hard and deserve more than they ever got. And I'm sure he didn't get hardly any recognition until after his death.
You know, Bill, I'm just going to jump in before you get into the home. I just think that when you hear of these things, especially the impact that he had during the explosion, the aftermath and everything like that, and I don't mean this to sound callous as it probably is going to sound, my apologies ahead of time, that's probably what allowed him, and again, I don't know his history, to continue and be successful, even though he wasn't allowed in the hospital, but to practice because probably he gained so much confidence from people who may not have given him a shot before, had no choice, and saw the way this man worked, and lost sight of his skin color. I don't know that happened, Billy. You like to think so.
I would think so. So the home is hopefully, well, it will be given heritage status as it should be.
Yes. Yeah, it must have been where he practiced. And
He opened a clinic in his house because, of course, as I say, he was denied privilege in the hospital.
Of course.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That day and time.
And I think a lot of doctors did, in that time and going back, it was a lot of time their clinic, their offices were part of their home. And, you know, they had to see people that way, had to deal with people and have them come in and did what they did. And again, I guess if someone needed to stay overnight somewhere, that's when they went to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, even though he may not have been given privileges to be in the hospital, you wonder how many people, how many staff, how many actual medical higher-ups in administration or doctors gave him his due in their way that they could have. It'd probably be really interesting reading to learn about him.
I do, really respect that he's being recognized and for his medical help, right? Like not necessarily the warrior side of things or whatever, but actually being able to save lives in this capacity is so important that we recognize people like this, individuals in general, and especially because he was, for his color, not recognized at the time.
Even the Institute, right, where he went to school, right? To know that, I mean, women at that time were not made to feel welcomed in any medical institution. It was like laughed at. You know, you want to be a doctor? And here is a man of color being able to go in there and the school accepting and letting him practice and leave it as a qualified doctor. It just makes you wonder about the times and who people come across that stop and say, yeah, come on in, versus you're not coming in here. Are you crazy? So a really interesting piece, Bill, to make you think about. Thanks for introducing us to Mr. Licker.
Okay,
Dr.
good.
Licker.
Yeah.
Bill Shackleton, he joins us Wednesday through Friday. We call the segment The Buzz. He brings a few items for us to discuss, and we get into some pretty interesting conversation and certainly learn a lot of stuff. Rumi and I will return. We have another hour of the program ahead. In that hour, Ryan Hui, he'll stop by for another edition of the Chatty Bookshelf. This week he highlights a few binge-worthy, ha-ha, you know he's into it, this is his favorite, sci-fi series. We get the conversation recaps and comment on segments from the past week on Cut for Time. But up next, we have our gardening segment with Susan Kearney. And today, we're talking about the jade plant next.
Keep it here for more of Kelly and Ramya on AMI TV.
Hello, I'm Sean Preece. Join me monthly for Sean of the Shed, where I introduce you to all the technology that can be so useful to us as blind or partially sighted people. Find Sean of the Shed wherever you find all your podcasts.